Good afternoon, everybody. We are starting our board meeting this week with a public educational session on research. Who is going to you?
Yes, it's me.
Alan.
Right, thank you. This will be slightly different. We're going to try a bit of technology today, and so people who are watching can actually see the what's going on the screen. I don't know if you can. You can't see it?
Yeah, that's fine.
It's a shame.
There is nothing going on.
Now, that's the second point of this exercise. It's the session's in three parts. The first is to, I actually want to just to do a very quick review or an overview of where we've come in the last few years in terms of developing the research program and why we actually made the changes in terms of the standard setting process. And I think it would be helpful then, we have an opportunity to think about what sort of triggers get things onto a research program and off the research program and so on, because I think there's just reading the due process handbook by itself is not as enriching sometimes as it could be. So I want to talk about some of those aspects here. The second middle part is having a look at where we are with each of the research projects. This information that's on here will be used to update our website over the next couple of weeks. It gives you a sense of where we're heading for our next milestones with each of our projects. And then the third part of it is a little bit about our move to evidence-supported standard setting in terms of just linking back to some other things that are going on, such as our greater emphasis on effects analysis and on collecting evidence to support the standard setting process. As part of that third part, I'll talk about some of the initiatives that we have in place to try and encourage more research that's helpful to us, as well as some things that we're doing ourselves. I said three parts because I think it might be helpful, rather than me talk for an hour and then open for questions, it might be better if we go through the first each of these thirds and we can discuss those aspects as we go along. So, said, how we develop standards, evolution. I think history matters a little bit because you'll understand why the trustees have made some of the changes that have in the due process. If you go back to where we were when I first came here, 2001 to 2006, we basically had a process in place where we had standard setting was essentially you have a proposal, went to a DP or discussion paper, an ED, and then to a final IFRS. And then we went from there, we fed into the implementation side of it. The first big change that was made was 2007, and a post-implementation review was introduced, mainly in response to the new standard we had on operating segments. It was around that time that operating segments, IFRS 3, business combinations, and there was a call for us to make sure we had a look back and reflect it 2 to 3 years after it had been in place. So the post-implementation review process was embedded into the handbook in 2007. The next thing that happened is in 2011, this is the agenda consultation, so it starts to get the relationship between these parts. The trustees suggested that we have every 3 years, and it's the 3 years begins once the review is actually completed, not overlapping, that we should have a public consultation. Now, my view is the first one in 2011 was probably more fundamental than the ones we're about to encounter in 2015. In 2011, we essentially had a relatively blank sheet canvas in terms of our agenda. Prior to that, we'd had the first phase was the improvements project, so led up 2005. After that, we moved on to essentially the convergence program, the Norwalk agreement. But heading into 2011, we were still trying to finish off those joint projects. I've been saying that for about 4 years now, trying to close off the joint projects, and we have a relatively clear agenda that we wanted to help shape. The agenda is still owned by the board. Okay, it's absolutely the board's responsibility for the agenda. But what we think is helpful is to have every 3 years a broad consultation to make sure that, and I use analogies a lot, but to make sure essentially that if you're on a voyage, you've got a sailing ship, that you're heading in the right general direction. And so the first one, because it was relatively blank canvas, we had suggested that we put on there the conceptual framework. We do a little bit more work in terms of the IFRIC side of it, some maintenance, for example. And then we have a research program and a standard setting program. So after that, we have this. Two things that came out of it. One is narrow scope, so this is more maintenance. And the second was a greater focus, if I can get to the right slide. The second was a greater separation of the research phase from the standards program. I'll come back to that in a little bit again. But they were, I think, relatively fundamental changes, because what we wanted to do was to define more clearly what the problem was in the research program. And I'll come back and I'll mention that in a sec, if I can get to the next slide. So where the technology doesn't always work. I'll go without that. Right, so standard setting process today is creation of the research program. What problems were we trying to fix? So we're in slide 10. I think what we tried to do was to identify, well, we identified we had some issues, and I think they're quite familiar to us. We didn't finish all our projects. We've got quite a few that we've actually ended up having to put on hold, and we haven't reinitiated. Our projects tend to slip adversely in terms of time rather than positively. So we were kept on pushing out some of our timetables. We were re-exposing more documents with major changes than we wanted to, so it's become quite common for us to have two exposures of a document. We have had some endorsement problems, particularly in Europe, and that increased some demands for the IFRS community to justify changes. That's why we've done quite a bit of work on effects analysis. And I think the one thing that was important as well, there's been a fear out there, and this is this issue about getting a fairly steady a period of calm, which they've asked for, is that people think that once you actually say you're going to look at a project, that it's inevitable that it gets onto this this timeline, and there's inevitability that it just goes out there and gets completed at the end. And so there's a bit of a fear. People don't want us to start to look at an issue because they're worried that ultimately we're just going to keep on bulldozing this through until we get it finished. So the idea was to separate the research side of it so that we actually focused a little bit more on the problem. And once we were comfortable that we had a solution that was potentially cost beneficial, that we could elevate that to the standard setting program. So it was much easier after that. And the other thing, which is on slide 10, is limited resources. We've only got so many people at the ISB. We've only got so much board time. We thought that by putting a research program together, and particularly a longer term one, we might be able to tap into some of our national standard setters to do some work for us, for example. And that's starting to take place with some of the longer term things. So move to slide 11, and we have a research program. It's supposed to be a broad research program. Emphasis, as I said, is on defining the problem. The idea is to, I was often joke, you know, we're very good at finding answers, and then people ask us what was the problem in the first place. And the idea is that when you do actually look at financial reporting, we're there to try and deal with change management. We're trying to change financial reporting for the better. The easiest thing to do first is to define the problem. And we also think that it's much easier to get agreement about what the problem is than it is about finding what the solution is. So the idea is that we have a research program that's either going to lead to a full proposal with a recommendation perhaps to develop a standard, or else it could be a recommendation that we don't. And to be perfectly honest, I think it would be helpful for us to demonstrate some of the earlier ones if we actually had a project that we said, no, we don't need to make any improvements here, because in fact the accounting's okay. Or in some cases it might be the opposite. Yeah, there might be an issue here, but the solution is such a big solution that we'd be better off looking at three or four small problems rather than creating a project to deal with a very, very big issue. I think it would be helpful, as I said, be helpful to give a signal that just because something goes on to the research program, it doesn't ultimately mean that we continue on to get to a standard. Now, slide 12. How does an issue get onto the research agenda? I've indicated in here it's a relatively low hurdle, how low that is. Most of this is about the effective use of resources. The idea is that to get something on, to start to think about an issue, we should have a relatively small hurdle. So if you think there's a problem, we can start thinking about it. Now, we have to be sensible with this as well, because it would be inappropriate for us to, for example, for me to take 12 people out of here, out of the staff, and have them working in a back room on, say, income taxes without telling you what we're doing. And similarly, I think the board probably needs to get the comfort and support of the IFRS Advisory Council if it's going to take on a major project. So Most of this is about communication. You're identifying where you're starting to think about issues. You know, I can tell you now I've got two little things, for example. We have one staff member who's quietly looking at some of the transition arrangements from IFRS or SMEs to full IFRS because of some comments that have come up and been part of our outreach. Now, the issue is I don't really know what the problem is just yet, so it's not the sort of thing I can bring to the board and say we're looking at that until I understand the problem well enough. But I haven't taken 15 people out to do that. I've got one person working sort of on a part-time basis to try and understand the problem a little bit better. And once you actually get this problem identified, that's when we should come back to the board and say, look, we've got an issue here that's come to our attention. What would you like to do? And think of that, now and again we get letters from outside. We've just created a new part of our website where if people have written to us formally and said we should add a project, they go onto there. This is where we should start to have a look at those quietly and then see if we should bring those to the board to actually feed in. Point about this is that adding both the research agenda then ultimately to the standards shouldn't have to wait 3 years. So you don't, when there's a burning issue, you should be able to deal with it as you go along. So the main part of the work program is guided by the agenda consultation, but that's, I see that as being making sure we've got the general direction, or they might look at that and say, you know what, you've just got too many projects there. Why don't you ditch or move two or three of those to a longer term and try and get some other standard setters to do some background work for you. So it's just getting a bit of input and guidance as to effective use of resources. One thing I hear on slide 13 is the opposite about research. Once you're on a research program, it sounds like the never-never. You're not going to produce anything or make any good changes. This is a new program, and I think some of the outputs will be relatively new as well. Traditionally, we've had discussion papers, but I think there's the scope for us to have what I call position papers, research papers, and other sorts of feedback. And some examples that I've got on there are things like the disclosure forum. We had a public forum, we got feedback into it, and then we published a formal feedback statement out of that. And what that does is it actually kind of draws a line or puts in place and says to people, this is what we've heard, and we're going to move on from there. And from that, we identified some projects, such as the IS1 amendments, that move quite quickly to a standard setting process. Okay. The other analogy I use for this is the research program to me is a bit like a pharmaceutical company in that this is the R&D side of it. We want to do some good R&D, make sure we identify what the problem is before we actually go to market. So we're doing a bit of testing. We go through really.
In the pharmaceutical industry, it's about 1 out of 10,000 projects that's bringing that they ultimately bring to the market. So
you don't want to use that analogy?
I don't think so.
See, some people might, because that's nice. That means a stable platform, you see. So we're out of the research program, we do get a bit of standard setting quite quickly. And I think for materiality, for example, we're expecting to come to you in the Q3 with a paper that will summarise what we understand about how materiality is used and described in case law, legislation, and used by regulators and so on. But I'm hoping out of that, we can then, once we get the feedback from you in a board session, update that paper, perhaps put it on the website, and that sort of becomes our position or issues paper. And then from that, we might signal that we've got some standard setting activity that we might do. By standard setting, it might be that we change the way we actually draft our disclosure requirements slightly. So those things we have yet to see. Another example on there is cash flows. The UK Financial Reporting Council is working with us on the disclosure initiative and is going to be looking at cash flows. So they will publish, probably under their own name, on their own website, a paper on cash flows that will input directly to our work. And we've worked with them to make sure the scope of the paper is going to be helpful to us. Emissions trading scheme, I have one other standard setter that's not in place yet, so I'd rather not name them, but they're looking at documenting all the schemes around Europe, for example, so that when we do eventually get that project up and running, we've actually got a lot of the background work done for us. So there are lots of different types of outputs that are coming as part of the program.
Alan, can I ask a question?
Yep.
Everything you've discussed thus far, in my mind, reminds me of that old cliche of you manage what you measure. And to pick up on your analogy to pharma R&D, There, in R&D world, you have phases, right? And there's a kind of an accountability, and there's timeline, and there's transparency into what is happening at various stages. So would there be a way of actually giving people better insight as to the various stages of the research and where it's going, as opposed to it just being kind of this amorphous kind of analysis and thinking and paper writing? And
Yeah, that's partly what this session's about, is to start with, because it's identifying what our next milestones are for the papers. Everything that we do, and I'm not going to use the farmer analogy now because I might get prodded, but everything that we do now is it comes to the board first, in that you're going to start to see, and this is why Manuel's sitting here, is that one of the parts of the session today will be looking at the liabilities equity or FICE project. We've got later on some disclosure initiative is coming to this board meeting. Next month you're going to start to see the equity method at the table. You're going to start to see business combinations under common control. You'll start to see where the board papers are, what our thinking is. You get to have input, and you'll start to see when we're targeting discussion papers, for example.
Will there be a formal scientific method, though, to the process, is what I'm asking. In other words, will there be a certain set of questions? Will there be an academic literature review? Will there be discussions with national standard setters? Will there be discussions with investors? Will there be, you know, a kind of protocol for every one of these questions, as well as what is the current literature both here and in Germany? You know, for example, take the topic that Manuel is going to raise with us a little bit later. Around the world, there's all kinds of different definitions about the word equity. It has different implications for whether or not companies can pay dividends in various jurisdictions. So one of the things I'd be curious about in that project would be the range of potential definitions of the word equity. You know, so just like, you know, how broad and disciplined and kind of methodical will that process be, or will it be kind of like the way I used to write my term papers, which is the night before.
Ask what grades you got. The idea is that what I don't want this to turn into is a tick box exercise where, in order to do anything, you have to have an academic review plus consult with national standards and so on. I use the word proportionality a lot, in that I think it depends on what the question is, and in some cases the pathway we take will actually depend on you, because we have a paper coming next month on the equity method without anticipating everything in it. But one of there are two clear issues with the equity method. One is trying to identify what the method is, whether it's measurement or one-line consolidation, and the mechanics go with that and disclosures. The second is who should use it, and what an associate or what significant influence actually means. And I think that one is a much easier question to answer than the other. They're not completely unrelated. One's much easier to answer than the other. Now, if you think that we should take the broader approach, then that will help, that will change quite a bit, I think, our research design for that. If you take the narrow approach, we have a different way of approaching the problem. So we have to give you enough information for you to make smart, comfortable decisions about the scope of projects, for example. So the difficulty, it's a bit iterative. You know, the whole point of the research project process is that we have to give you enough information to make smart decisions. But right now, it's really hard for me. I'm trying to predict next milestones and timing, but I just don't know what the scope's going to be, because we haven't done enough research to get to the scope on some of these things. So it's chicken and an egg.
Okay.
So that's the first phase. We have a couple of questions, perhaps.
Mary?
Two thoughts. One is, Alan, I know that we have a list of 12, 14 items on the research agenda, and we've heard that, you know, today we'll get liability equity. There's one on equity method coming next month. And it may be me coming late to the party, but has there been a prioritization by the board of which of these research projects we think is most critical and where we would prioritize putting some of the resources in? The other question, looking at slide 13, you talked about position papers and research papers, you know, requests for information, I get what those are, as preludes perhaps or alternatives to discussion paper, the idea being that, you know, the work to get a discussion paper together is much more substantial. guess a first reaction I have is that especially position papers, and maybe it's the title, but if we're trying to say what is the problem, defining the problem and possible answers, I see a chance that that would become another source of informal, almost application guidance or interpretation guidance, because in deciding whether or not something is a problem, you're very often working through what are the issues that somebody's raising. And I guess it's not, let's not do them just because of that, but thinking about how we look at, you know, something that we're going to produce and have that risk in mind.
Yeah.
Because I think we should be exploring issues. I guess, let me throw one other thing in here. I thought at one time when we talked about building up to a discussion paper, it was not only problem definition, but what the possible solutions were, so that if you looked at it and said, okay, if we're going to try and resolve that, it's going to require such a fundamental change that we've got to have everybody on board that they're willing, and we know that this is going to be the barrier. Are we still thinking about trying to incorporate at least a rough outline of likely solutions when we come to the problem definition, or is that only if we decide to move to discussion paper phase, or even after discussion paper, yeah. Or we'll see.
You had a couple of questions in there. Just answer two quickly now. One is the prioritisation.
Yeah.
I was going to go to slide 16 and say we've only just started to build up our core staff.
Yeah.
So in a way, we haven't had an opportunity to prioritise because we've only been trying to match up our skill set with the projects on here. So up until the beginning of probably Q3, Q4 last year, we really hadn't actually got any of these projects up and running. So we hadn't done a priority. I've done some work on identifying priorities in terms of sort of five criteria about how difficult it is, how politically political sensitivity, for want of a better term. In other words, you know, when you've got a lot of different practice embedded, say, in, as we do in extractive activities, that it's going to take a lot of work to work through those differences. And so degree of difficulty, the change management, I guess, the level of change management, there are quite a few factors you have to consider, you know, and degree of difficulty is also a proxy for how much time it's going to take, for example. So you can't have a whole lot of major projects to take up all our time and constituents' time. So we're trying to get a balance of those things. The bigger they are, probably the longer term they would be, and try to get more background work done earlier on. The second thing about are we going to do, if you've got problem definition as well as a solution, I think it depends a little bit, because in my view is, if you've got quite a bit of change management to manage, then I would actually tend to probably do it in two phases and actually make sure everybody was on board with the problem first, then move to a solution. In other cases, I actually think you can probably go ahead quite quickly with, for example, the problem defined and then the tentative solutions, having jettisoned hopefully the ones that aren't going to work and say, look, this is the way we think we should actually progress. So I think it depends a little bit on the project.
There you go.
No, Ellen, my question mainly focuses on page 11. That is what the objectives we will want to achieve, the final products of the research phase. Or alternatively, what I want to ask is what the final quality want to see the products of phase. You know, I think the idea is, you know, I remember firstly, Steve raised these ideas, you know, several years ago during away day, because during that time we dropped so many items or projects, nearly 10, or suspend about 10, and then, you know, we discussed. And now recently we have another problem, then that is we had more re-exposure drafts. People even want a third exposure. So I think the objective is to make a solid basis to move into the standard setting process. I fully agree with. But I personally feel, use two examples, we're not in the process. I feel if measure on that basis, I don't think it's ready. For example, we will discuss this week about regulatory activity. I don't think it's ready to publish as a DP, because both on the asset liability approach or on revenue approach, we have not discussed. Firstly, we have not concluded yet. You know, the or even have different alternatives explored enough. You know, say, you know, some will support asset liability bill, others will not. Or if we switch to revenue bills, what would be the outcome of how to recognize, measure, and others? So I would feel, unless we say that we will have, you know, first DP, second DP, and third DP, otherwise, I don't feel it's ready, my personal view. And secondly, using macro hedging as the example, you know, in the area of non-financing, non-banking sector, and we not touch so much. Now, if it is so fortunate, firstly, people support DP. And secondly, people said we can use the ideas in the DP all into non-financing sector. Otherwise, we must have another DP on non-banking sector. And I using the words when we discussed this issue, I said whether we will have a supplementary document, a supplementary DP to the current DP. So my key question is, you know, the objectives. If the objective is to make solid basis to move into stand stage, and then I think we should be very careful. You know, I personally feel I use these two examples. Regulatory, I don't think it's ready. And then the macro hedging, there will be a risk. If people don't feel, you know, we can apply the ideas into non-financing sector, and then we have to, as I said, supplementary or secondary DP.
My response would be that the sole process is to provide you with enough information that you're comfortable to go to the next phase, for example, develop a standard. And I don't think there are any perfect answers in this. It might be that you're a little bit underdone in some areas of a discussion paper, but you feel confident enough that you can supplement, you can pick that up in the next phase by going next to an ED, for example. In other cases, you may want to go, as you say, another discussion paper on some aspects, but it's going to be your call as a board. You know, again, I don't want this mechanical where you have to solve every single problem has to be accepted and solution identified then before you can go to a standard. The idea is to try and make this more efficient all the way through. Right. The research projects themselves, we go to slide 15. We've separated them into short and medium term projects. It is quite a list in there, I think. Is it 13 or 14 projects? Have a look through slide 16. I've just tried to give an indication of how we started to staff up the projects. You can see 2012 was a fairly slow start. It was me. But we've actually started to build up a bit more. We're now up to 6 people, and within the next month it'll be up to 9, because we've got another person starting next week on the disclosure initiative, and then another person I think the week after that on disclosure initiative, so, and another person towards the end of the month. So we've got we're starting to build a bit of a core of people that actually work on the projects. You'll see there, I also wanted to give an indication where we have a holes in our process. You know, we haven't at this stage got anybody working on emissions trading schemes, because we haven't got a person available that matches the needs on that one. I think that's solvable in the next couple of weeks, but we've got to get a couple of projects finished in the first instance.
But didn't you just say that we expected a national standard setter to do work?
Well, national standards, we've got, in the case of emission trading schemes, we're going to have a national standard setter that's going to help document European accounting schemes. We're hoping to use the New Zealand standard setter to document the Australasian ones. And then the IPSASB is working on that as well. So we need somebody in here to keep a track of those projects as they go along.
Sue?
When I look at the staffing on page 16, and if you marry it up with some of the targets for sort of what we're trying to achieve on some of these projects, like Disclosure Initiative, for example, and also on FICE, given how complex the issues are that we have to, that the staff need to look at, for us then to look at, we seem like we're quite stretched on resources, I'd have to say. Like, even though there might be lots of individuals involved, for example, on the disclosure initiative, got the equivalent of 1.4 people to do what seems like quite a lot of work.
Yeah.
Seems quite ambitious.
It is a little bit ambitious, and I agree. In fact, I think example of the disclosure initiative is the outputs from that have been quite as, given the fact that they've been juggling working on conceptual framework at the same time. But the disclosure initiative, that's one where we've got two more staff people coming into that. One to work specifically on materiality, and that doesn't show up on here yet because that person hasn't started yet. But the disclosure initiative, I think our outputs are, we're looking at Q3, we should be looking at the feedback we get from our comment letters on IS1, and that's what the new staff, one of the new staff members will have a look at. But the materiality will continue on. So
six will be seven.
Yeah. Well, six.
For
will,
example.
Yeah, six will be nine actually within a month.
Okay.
But the other issues are things like FICE, for example, it is a one person shop at the moment, and it's whether or not we need other ways to try and get more resources into that, or whether we just, it's a way we use our board advisors to get feedback, for example.
I think we should just need to be realistic, because I think that, you know, we get criticised a lot for our timelines being pushed out all the time on our projects, but I think a lot of it, we're very ambitious with what our targets are relative to what our resourcing is. So I think we just need to be careful.
Yeah, but at the same time, resources should be freed up from the big four standards.
But also it's a natural time for quite a few people to leave, and we're already seeing that on some of the big projects as they're coming to an end. And also you have to have the right people with the right skills for the right project, so it's not as easy as just juggling people around.
Yeah. What I want to do is, the priority at the moment is to get the projects into enough shape and we've got good scope. Because once you've actually defined the project reasonably well, you can then get the national standard setters and others in to help you out. But at the moment, if you don't actually tell them what the problem is, then you can't get them to help out. And that's been our experience in the past, as they provided us with feedback that hasn't matched up with what we've been trying to do. So that's why the equity method, for example, is about scope. BISCOM under control is about scope. The ones where we're heading more towards DPs are FICE, because we want to align that with the conceptual framework. And rate regulation, where we're committed to trying to get rid of what is a temporary standard.
Mary?
Alan, just looking at this, I think it's helpful, you know, when you take the whole list of revenue and sort it into short and medium term and then longer term, and, you know, we see resources allocated commensurately, so relatively little for longer term. But I guess within the range of short to medium term, even if it's to scope it and then try and get, you know, use that to leverage a national standard setter, I'm not comfortable that we're trying to kick off what looks like a dozen scoping projects all in about the same time. And I'm wondering if we, as a board, should try and identify what our priorities are, maybe through some interaction with advisory council, saying, here are the first three or four we want to do. And yeah, maybe there's a bit of a trade-off if there's somebody with special knowledge or skill set that we have available for a limited time. Maybe that jumps a little, but I think we should try and first articulate what we think our priorities are after doing some consultation, rather than trying to get them all in shape so they can be pulled off the shelf and scope.
A little bit of that is going on, probably more at my hand than anybody else's.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see that's deliberately in alphabetical order because I didn't want to give a sense of priority there. But I agree. There are some that are naturally coming to the top. BISCOM under COM control. And that's sort of jumping in a little bit to some of these individual ones. We have been asked by securities regulators to look at that because it's a known area, it's a problem. Discount rates, it's come up in so many different projects, particularly with the pensions, for example. Disclosure initiative speaks for itself. That's one where we're trying to get things done quickly. And then we start to get the slowing down a bit. The emissions trading scheme, I'm just trying to get somebody to monitor the work that others are doing at the moment. Equity method, we have accelerated a little bit because of all the issues that are coming up from Interpretations Committee. Extractive activities, we haven't given much time to. And then the foreign currency translation and inflation, we have been sitting on reports and some analysis from the Koreans and from Glass for quite a long time, and we think we owe it to and deal with that. So we put a staff member onto those and to try to close those ones out. And then liabilities, it's just a monitoring brief, watching brief, because we're waiting till we get the framework finished on that. FICE is the one we wanted to go out at the same time as the conceptual framework, and rate regulator we have to. So if I reordered those, I think you'd actually find that you've probably got six priority projects and the rest are secondary projects underneath that. And that might be more helpful to signal that more aggressively, I think.
Okay.
So I wasn't going to go through these projects in any detail at all, because we've got Emmanuel, for example, is going to go through in a couple of minutes the FICE project, and we've got disclosure coming and so on. So the idea was to just provide you with a brief description of what the project was looking at and what the next milestone is. So there's, I think you've got about 20 slides of background information. So unless you're I'm happy to take questions, but I'd rather not answer questions on Christy's behalf, for she does the disclosure and manuals and so on.
Alan, the one project here that to me was conspicuously omitted was FSP. Maybe you could remind me how we're going to tackle that.
You're going to listen to Christy give a presentation, not on FSP, but on we have to look at the scope of the project on IS 1, 7 and 8,
mm-hmm.
the replacement of those. And the question often comes up is, how does that relate to financial statement presentation? I think we'll at least start of a discussion about that. So FSP was not a project that at the time we put the agenda consultation together was pushed as being a priority. The priority at that stage was conceptual framework and then disclosure principles.
Yeah.
Okay. So Manuel will have a look at FICE, and then I'll just wrap up with some observations about some of the research program.
Thanks, Alan. So following on from Alan's introduction.
Now for the main piece.
It's one
of
the crowd.
Well, Agenda Paper 13B is its primary objective is just to put the project on the map, put it on the radar, so you know what kinds of things or matters we're thinking about, and give you an indication of what's in the pipeline in terms of the next few months of board meetings, what we intend to discuss with you. The paper is for information only, and there's no questions to the board, but I'm happy to take comments. I just wanted to highlight a few things. Just the fact that in the short term, the focus is very much on informing the conceptual framework project. So the board's discussing that project in relation to the elements, the definitions of the elements. So we'll be trying to identify the issues that have come up in practice and the difficult instruments that exist that have caused the board problems in the past, and seek to stress test the concepts in that project using those instruments. Following from that, in the medium term, the focus will then shift to building a case for a standards level project. So a lot of what Alan was discussing before about getting some definition around the problem, setting out precisely what the board is trying to achieve, what the objective of the project is, and looking at the scope in a bit more detail. Finally, I just wanted to point out that there are a number of matters or issues in progress, either in the at the Interpretations Committee or at the board, that might be relevant to the project, so issues such as the NCI puts, etc. We will be planning to bring a paper to the board at a future meeting that will talk about scope and will include an analysis of those issues, where the board can decide whether it wants to tackle those issues within the scope of this project, or perhaps within the scope of some kind of narrow scope project. That was all. It was for information only, but I'm happy to take comments if you have any.
No comments?
I just had a couple of, and it goes back to the observation I made earlier to Alan. In paragraph 9, you talked about short-term objectives, Manuel, which sounds very good to me. But in terms of emphasizing the point that Alan made about are we going to have all the information we need to make sound decisions, I think it would be helpful, and I'm not quite sure, I'll leave it to your discretion at what point in time we do this, but it would be good to have a list of instruments of, you know, whether it be exotic or hybrid instruments or even plain vanilla type instruments, and how they're classified today, just to ground everybody in this process. An academic literature review, I think, actually could be quite helpful here to the extent it's being, has been done. And a range of definitions about liabilities, equities across jurisdictions, not all jurisdictions, but generally speaking, would be quite helpful. I was reading an article that was just published this month in the Financial Analyst Journal on derivative pricing models for contingent convertible bonds, COCOs. The reason being is that it is estimated, according to this article, that as much as 1 trillion of these bonds may be issued by European financial institutions over the next several years to shore up the capital position of those entities. And it is becoming increasingly more of interest among the investor community just how these things are being priced. Okay, how do you arrive at the price? And I think it'll be interesting just to know, as these types of instruments, as well as other instruments, you know, make their way to the marketplace, how they're being classified today, how they're being looked at within the context of both, you know, jurisdictional as well as gap kind of concepts. And I think that will help us put some boundaries around what we think is sound and what, you know, doesn't make sense. So, for example, a COCO essentially has a lot of embedded derivative features in it, right? So what comes to mind, obviously, is a fair value through P&L type approach for that type of an instrument, although I think a lot of people would prefer not to go down that path with those instruments. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, as we take these things apart, how the market looks at them from the buyer side, the investor side, and how that will affect then, you know, the way we classify them for purposes of, you know, reporting from the issuer side.
Hey, it's a good point, Pat, and I think one of the challenges this project faces, and one of the things that I was alluding to in the paper, is a lot of these instruments are quite complex, and simplifying those in a manner which will help the board and constituents understand what the issues are and why these types of instruments are quite difficult to classify is going to be one of the key challenges. We're going to try and do that. We'll be bringing some of those instruments. We'll be identifying some of those. We won't be looking at the entire universe. I think that's going to be quite a substantial piece of work, but we'll definitely be looking at those hard to classify instruments.
Okay.
And looking at what characteristics make them difficult.
Sue?
Thanks for the paper, Emmanuel. It was interesting. I thought you did a very good job of describing the challenges, which is a good start. I think the tricky thing with this project for me is always going to be working out what the scope should be. In an ideal world, it would be great to have this lovely definitions of debt and equity that we could then use in a sort of consistent way across everything. And as you rightly point out, there's lots of knock-ons all across our literature. And I guess one of the early things to do would be to work out what is a manageable and realistic scope for the project, which is sort of the problem definition that Alan's been talking about. What did strike me reading the board papers this week was already, even in this week, how many interactions there are with other decisions or conversations that we'll have on the IFRS 2 issues, for example, touches on this, on the debt equity part of the conceptual framework. So sort of peeking ahead a little bit to the conceptual framework, I think having some boundaries there that we can use as a sort of foundation, at least as a starting point for this work, will be helpful for your thinking, although I agree that checking backwards and forwards will probably be a bit of an iterative process. I think one thing that I think is really important, in addition to sort of having an eye to instruments that Pat Finnegan's just mentioned, is the thing that I always struggle with to help me sort of work out what I think the good answers should be in these in this area is really getting a good understanding of what users are looking for and the information that they get about equity instruments. Is it solvency they care about? Is it liquidity? Is it dilution? Is it value transfers? I don't know the answer to that question, and I feel like I need to understand that better to then start helping answer some of these questions. And so I think you mentioned in this paper getting some more feedback from users, and I think that's really, for me, a piece of the puzzle that we're really, I don't feel I have a good handle on anyway at the moment. Maybe you've got that, but I don't.
Now, one idea from Pat, I agree with that is, you know, we should have some kind of update on the education session on the difficulties around those instruments. And I think one easy way is, you know, we had long discussions. I think we once list more than 20 different kind of instruments in the 3-5 years ago, and some of them we are very easy to make decision in the past, but others feel difficult. And I think you can just dig into the previous papers. And of course, I think we have to add latest development, you know, which may be quite controversial, particularly related to the financial industries, and the regulator may have different views about how to classify them. And so my suggestion is, if we really want to do so, and we have previous papers and have some kind of summaries, and tell the board members among those 20 and 10 is easier to make decision, others are hard. And
That's right, Wakewell, and I don't think I was thinking about going into the market, picking an instrument, showing how you would classify it to the board. It would be very much looking at what we've learned from the past, so looking at the types of instruments that have gone to the Interpretations Committee, for instance, and picking those ones up, what features in those instruments were difficult to classify, and looking also at what the board has published before and what other standard setters have published before. For instance, the FASB has been working on this issue for a very long time, and a lot of their experience will help inform the board, I think. So we'll try and leverage off that as much as we can.
Thank you. Let me clarify the standpoint of this project in relation to the conceptual framework. In your paragraph 20, you described the challenge very well. And actually, I like the sentence, paragraph 20A, the universe of claim is continuous, not discrete. And this is a very good sentence. And then, however, it looks like your project will be done based on the presumption of binary distinction. Is that correct? Or is there any chance for you to come back to the different idea? Depends on the outcome of discussion of conceptual framework.
I think it very much depends on the outcome of the conceptual framework. So this is done in the current context, I guess. We'll be discussing the elements within the scope of the conceptual framework project, and to the extent that this project can inform that, then it will be helpful. But very much, this project will draw on the conclusions you reach in the conceptual framework project. So, depending on those conclusions, we'll use those as the foundation. We'll build some proposals, mm-hmm. depending on, you know, the board's decision about scope, etc. Based on the proposals in the conceptual framework ED or what we're developing for that exposure draft, and see where that takes us.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a very interesting task ahead of you. You are to define grey, a mix of black and white. And I think it's almost impossible to do that. And I think earlier discussions have proven to me that there is no answer, really. So I think you could go after this from an academic theoretical point of view, which is important. But I think it's more important to really try to understand how does people make economic decisions in these circumstances, and what type of information does really support people when they're trying to analyze this. And I think looking for this definition of gray could be interesting, but the value is in finding, yeah, let's call it a pragmatic model for how to split up things around this.
I think that's a good point, Jan, and I guess the aim isn't to search for perfection here, and I think this is where we come to the problem definition. If we define the problem as fixing what's currently in IFRSs, so IS 32, IFRS 2, etc., eliminating some of those consistencies, that might lead us somewhere. Or if we look at, for instance, what information users are looking for, that might lead us to some kind of proposal which is more based on disclosures or presentation, earnings per share or some other information that will help them to reach their end, to reach their objective. So we'll definitely be looking at what those needs are.
Are the problem cases, the gray areas, are they all in the financial industry or also outside?
All of them.
It's not only the financial industry, but it's the financial instruments that are the problem. It's
designed by the financial industry.
Or a designer.
A company.
And it's all about things, making things look, instruments look like equity, but giving them at the same time.
Some of it's genuinely tailoring things to meet particular investors' demands and things, and so they become
investors' demands.
What sort of profile investors are looking for, and so they can end up very structured just because of that.
And then you get some kind of classification, which for some people might not make much sense.
Man,
yeah. Thanks. With reference to your last comment, I think it's very important to stress that this is not only limited to financial institutions. In history, it had been started with financial institutions seeking for instruments that could consider as capital by regulators, but this has spread it out to non-financial entities as well. And under non-financial entities, they are developing quite a significant different number of instruments all over the world. So I think Manuel comments on trying not to identify all potential instruments is very clear. It would be almost impossible to identify all types of instruments that we have, but understand all the major features. And of course, this should be tied to the conceptual framework, concept of liability and equity, because this is the only possible way to try to find a way out of this gray area that Jan's made, because they keep playing with this in order to have to achieve the best outcome when developing the instrument.
Okay.
Okay, so just to wrap up, let's say for the whole research program, you'll see on slide 35, it's got the next milestones in there. So I wasn't going to spend much time on that other than just gives you a sense of when you start to see material come to you. The other thing I want to mention as well is the role of standard setters, and they are working with us on some aspects of projects. I've given an indication. In hindsight, I changed the title on slide 7. This is National Standard Setters basically have undertaken work in areas related to these projects, not necessarily specifically for these projects. But in slide 37, you'll see there's a lot of interest from standard setters to work on things. And I've given you already a sense of the UK Financial Reporting Council are going to work on cash flows for us. We seem to have another standard set is interested in working on the difference between an accounting policy, an accounting estimate change, and an error correction, which is perhaps timely given our discussions at the Interpretations Committee. So we're trying to get small pieces that will actually feed into our major projects. The last little bit I wanted to mention was, again, this is about providing you with information to support your decision making, and that's a little section at the end on evidence-supported standard setting. And what we've been trying to do is move a little bit towards, I guess, more objectivity in terms of the information we provide you rather than relying on assertions. You'll see lots of evidence of that in the way that you'll see our effects analysis are now presented for, at the end of the revenue recognition project. The leases exposure draft included a section within the interpretations committee. We don't want to make a change in terms of interpreting unless we actually have evidence of diversity in practice, not just a perception that there are different answers, but actual evidence that there is diversity either emerging or is actually existing in practice. And so we've been doing a few things internally, and I just wanted to use the opportunity to mention a couple. We have been trying to foster academics to do some research that's helpful to us. Patrick's talked about academic reviews, which can be helpful. But the more that research is targeted to the decisions that you have to make as board members, the more helpful it is. And so today we actually launched a research centre on our website, sort of a web-based research centre, and a new twice a year update called Research Roundup. Yeah, Research Roundup. So, and the idea is that to raise awareness that we do know, for example, I'll use this as an extreme, it's about 2022 we'll be reviewing IFRS 9, I think it is, a post-mutation review. So we can give a bit of a signal that, you know, by then we'd like some research on that subject.
But you should be implemented.
Yeah.
But, it needs to be published.
But we know, you know, 3 or 4 years out, roughly what our post-mutation review process is going to look like. And by publishing the research agenda and the longer-term agenda in particular, we're going to identify the types of questions we're looking for some feedback on. So that's raising awareness. At the moment, we really haven't fed that sort of program out to academics, and we did that today as part of a launch as well. I didn't want to mention too much about those things. We'll just start to see, I think, coming back in the staff papers, a little bit more evidence to help support the decision making. We're not about to become the university of the IFRS Foundation. We leave that up to the academics, but we are trying to be a little bit more robust about the way we present information to you, including simulation work and things like that. So unless there are any questions on the last bit, that's kind of where I wanted to get to today.
Any further questions? Thanks, Alan, for this really good presentation. Shall we have a break?